Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program from my apartment in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 8, 2020. President Salva Kiir orders investigation into last week's land dispute in Juba.
The people who might have fought Fikir Khan, these are one people, and they have been one since the struggle started 1983.
And some COVID-19 patients in South Sudan say the health ministry is doing very little to trace cases.
This is a clear case of negligence. It is a clear case of negligence because those of Ministry of Health and those who are in center in particular are supposed to prioritize.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has ordered an investigation into last week's violent land dispute in Juba's Gumbo neighborhood known as Sherikat. Young men and women in Bor protested following the clashes between civilians and the bodyguards of a senior military officer who was killed in the land dispute. Mr. Kiir spoke for the first time on record about the incident, which left 9 people dead, including his cousin. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Following the incident in which 9 people died, President Kiir formed a 7-member committee headed by Justice Minister Madol Arol to investigate the Sherikat shootings. Speaking at a public ceremony in Juba yesterday, President Kiir said the committee will submit its report within a week.
The people who might have fought Fikir Khan, these are one people, and they have been one since the struggle started 1983. They were fighting side by side against the enemy. And whatever good number of people that might have come from diaspora cannot come and change the direction that we have been moving to.
Kiir says the committee will interview witnesses, conduct hearings, and issue arrest warrants for anybody who refuses to appear before the committee. Nyal Deng Nyal, a minister in the office of the president, who is also a member of the committee, says a panel will do its best to determine what led up to the shootings in Sherikat and who should be held accountable.
It's critically important to await the outcome of this investigation process. The investigation process is being led by no other than the Minister of Justice personally. It's a high-level investigation team comprising individuals who have been selected on the basis of their professional and technical competence, and they should be able to render a good work, hopefully, within the next few days.
Justice Minister Madol Arol says getting to the bottom of the Sherikat shootings is important for the community and the country.
All we can say is that we wholeheartedly accept the assignment, and we are committed to accomplishing the mission successfully.
Other members of the committee include Chief of Defence Forces, Lieutenant General Johnson Juma Okot, Director General of Internal Security Bureau, Akol Kur, and Inspector General of Police, General Majak Akej. Residents say the shootings began after a land dispute between some residents and a distant cousin of President Kiir's, Lual Oku Kiir, also known as Lual Marin, who later died from his injuries. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Local leaders and aid officials say the number of people displaced by floods in Bor County of Jonglei State has risen. Jonglei State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director Gabriel Deng Ajak says more people will be displaced in the coming weeks. Ajak is appealing to aid agencies to help the displaced. He says he is working with international organizations to provide relief items to the affected families. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Bor County officials said the flooding began after the River Nile crested its banks in mid-May, caused by days of heavy rains. They say the Nile continues to overflow, causing thousands of people to flee the area for higher ground. Community leaders and internally displaced persons accuse state officials of ignoring their suffering. Residents say they lost everything in the floods. 45-year-old Chut Ayi Atim Residents of Bor Town Sachengdir Safav says she and her two children are sheltering in Malek Secondary School after her three huts collapsed in the floods. Speaking in Dinka, Ayi says residents like her have no mosquito nets or food.
All my structures are collapsed and everything that I have is all destroyed. I only took those mattresses that we are using here with my kit. No put like now. Since morning, we ate nothing. The government should not be silent if we are its people. They have to do something about our condition.
Ayane Mabure, a resident of Bor's Laudier Savhav, says her house was also destroyed by the floods. Mabure says she and her children are living in a school compound. Speaking in Dinka, Mabure says she worries her children will contract the coronavirus and other diseases because of all the displaced people crowding into the school.
Yes, we have no put mosquito net, but my major concern now is the issue of the virus. How can people live in a such place congested like this and do not catch the disease? It is risky here. It is the government that should be concerned about us first and do something, but they have done nothing to us.
Jonglei State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director Gabriel Dengajak says more than 10,000 Bor area residents have been displaced from their homes due to the flooding.
The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission on Friday, together with the humanitarian partners, carried out an assessment in the areas which were heavily flooded. Northwest of Bor Town, that include Kindi, Leudiet, and area of Malau. And about 10,800 people got displaced to schools and churches. They have been living in the churches for the last 4 days.
Ajak says the IDPs are in urgent need of food, shelter, and medicine. He says his office is working with humanitarian organizations to help the affected residents as soon as possible. Jonglei State Acting Administrator Mabure Atem Mabure says his office is referring the broken dike, which will help steer the water back into the Nile.
The state government has been very, very committed to look into that. The dike is repaired. And so we had, there were six part of dike that were broken. And the state government has managed to repair our RRCs, and they have already made an appeal to UPA together with the government and to the humanitarian community that there is an assistance to be brought to this IDP.
Mabure says the state government has no resources to help the displaced. He is calling on the national government and NGOs to quickly help the thousands of displaced. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng reporting from Bor.
Some COVID-19 patients in South Sudan are criticizing the health ministry for delaying to trace and test contacts of confirmed cases. Some patients say health workers took samples from contacts more than 2 weeks ago, but have not returned the results. Information Minister Michael Makui, who tested positive for the virus, says there is negligence by a health ministry in combating the virus in South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake, Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Information Minister Makui, a former member of the dissolved high-level task force on COVID-19, says after he tested positive and immediately self-isolated, it took health workers 7 days to collect samples from his contacts, including family members. Makui said mid last week after learning he tested positive more than 2 weeks ago, he still had not been informed whether any of his family members are COVID-19 positive.
This is a clear case of negligence. It is a clear case of negligence because those of Ministry of Health and those who are in center in particular are supposed to prioritize. This random sampling which they are doing in the town, meanwhile they are not looking into the real issues, which are already proved to be positive, is unacceptable.
Makwe questions whether officials at the Health Ministry's Emergency Operations Center have set up a system for controlling the spread of the pandemic. He says discrepancies in procedures at the health ministry make people wonder whether South Sudan can contain the spread of the virus.
My advice to the health authorities is to improve their way of doing things. And they need to prioritize. And instead of just taking my sample and putting it at number 4,000, for how long will I wait for the result?
Juba resident Mabith Ring Mabith came out of isolation after recovering from COVID-19 recently. He says healthy workers from the National Public Laboratory took samples from his 6 family members more than a week ago but have yet to release their results. Mabith says healthy workers told him they face several challenges, including no government-provided transportation at times.
They told us several times they are facing this problem. I got annoyed even when I called them several times. I got annoyed. But when they came home, they explained the challenges that they have. I totally agree with them.
Mabith is calling on the government to improve the welfare of healthy workers at the Emergency Operations Center, which coordinates South Sudan's operations to contain the pandemic. Dr. Richard Laku, the incident manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry, says the laboratory does not have enough equipment to do its work. He says the laboratory receives 1,000 samples for testing per day but cannot come close to carrying out that many tests.
The PCR that are available in the country, again, the first one now having problem because of the collaborating reagent, which now we are trying to look because it is not here, not manufactured here, has to come from German and all this. So we have some technical issues that are related to this. Number 2 is the capacity issue that are coming in based on the case or samples that are there.
As of Sunday, South Sudan had registered 1,604 positive cases of COVID-19, including 15 recoveries and 19 deaths. Several government officials, including Minister Makwei, First Vice President Riek Machar, Defense Minister Angelina Teny, and Deputy Foreign Minister Deng Dao Deng, have recovered from COVID-19, according to Health Ministry Undersecretary Dr. Makur Matur Koryom. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, street protests continue in the United States. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Try to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some Sudanese political analysts are welcoming the decision of the UN Security Council to establish a political mission in Sudan, saying it will help in restoring peace and stability in the country. A political analyst says the mission could face challenges given Sudan's long political history. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Haja Ali, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says the new UN mission to Sudan could help the transitional government achieve its objective of lasting peace. He says the new mission should ensure countrywide constitutional conference is held to draft a permanent constitution before national elections are held.
Peace process should get the
attention and the focus of the new UN mission in the country, because this is also the priority of the government, how to achieve peace within such complex conditions in the country. Also, peace is how to maintain the political stability in the country.
Looking at Sudan's long political history, Ali says the new UN mission may face obstacles along the way as long as Sudan continues to have different armed groups operating in the country. He says the UN mission should help the government demobilize communities and reintegrate all forces into one national army before the end of the transitional period.
We have the official Sudan Armed Movement Armed Forces. We have the rapid support forces, and we have a number of armed groups who would like to be integrated into the Sudan Armed Forces, like the Abdul Wahid faction, who opposed to the peace negotiations in Juba. Also, Minni Minawi from the Sudan Liberation Movement, another faction, he pulled out.
Muhammad Ali Fazari is a Sudanese writer and editor-in-chief of the online newspaper Khartoum Today. Fazari says the new UN mission will be a blessing for the country. He says the government needs to cooperate with the mission and help it achieve its mandate.
No doubt that the new UN mission in Sudan is going to be a new development in political situation in Sudan, where the mandate of this mission is to help the transitional government to reach a successful transitional period and also to help the peace process by providing all mechanism of peace building, whether in Darfur or in war-affected areas.
Fazari says the quick response of the UN Security Council in establishing such a mission is a clear indication that the international community supports political reforms in Sudan and wants to see a successful and a peaceful outcome from the country's historic revolution.
It aims to help the government of Sudan to build constitutional institution in Sudan, and also this is for helping the government to have a new reintegration and open up policy with international communities.
Both Ali and Fazari are calling for speedy and genuine peace talks in Juba so that Sudan can embark on a new period of development. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Nearly 2 weeks after an African-American man died in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota, protests against racial injustice continue nationwide and in other countries. But Trump administration officials dispute the core of the complaints that police brutality, including the death of George Floyd, is a result of systemic racism in the United States. AFP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
No justice! No peace! No racism!
No racist police was one of the chants of protesters this weekend.
The outrage that Americans are feeling today about the death of George Floyd is very real. It's very legitimate.
But appearing on ABC's This Week, Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf challenged the refrain.
I do not think that we have a systemic racism problem with law enforcement officers across this country.
There's always the ghost in the room.
Also on ABC's This Week, Congresswoman Val Demings.
We have been fighting systemic racism in this country for 400 years.
A former police chief, Demings says the nation needs to
hold police accountable,
examine training standards and use of force policies, and who exactly is being hired in law enforcement. Ben Thomas, Washington.
From the United States, we move to Australia, where the Australian government is disputing Chinese government's advice given to Chinese citizens, urging them not to travel to Australia because of what Beijing calls surge in racism during the corona pandemic. The Chinese Ministry of Culture and Tourism issued the warning, insisting there was a significant increase in racist attacks on Chinese and Asian people in Australia. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
China is Australia's biggest trading partner, but there is friction in the relationship.
Australia's recent call for an international investigation into COVID-19, which is widely thought to have originated in Wuhan, China, infuriated Beijing. Despite denials on both sides, bans and tariffs imposed on Australian agricultural products were seen by analysts as retaliation by China. There was also criticism of Australia's early February decision to ban travellers from mainland China because of concerns over the spread of the virus. Australia has since closed its borders to all foreign nationals. In a further worsening of bilateral ties, authorities in Beijing are urging Chinese tourists not to travel to Australia because of fears of racism over the coronavirus, citing an alarming increase in violence against Asian people. This is strongly denied by officials in Canberra. Australia's Deputy Prime Minister Michael McCormack.
It's a rather moot point because at the moment there are no travelling happening between China and Australia. But let me say this, Australia is a very welcoming country and we're certainly mindful of the fact that we've got $149.7 billion trade with China. We are very mindful that we need to exercise respect. Anybody from China who is in Australia is most welcome to be here.
However, anecdotal evidence has suggested that Chinese Australians and other Asian migrants have suffered racism because of the pandemic. Some have said they faced increased hostility both online and in shops since the outbreak began. Cell phone videos appear to support some of the allegations. A young Asian boy was reportedly bullied at school in Australia by other students who demanded he be tested for the virus. A Chinese family in Melbourne says their home was targeted by racists three times in a week. Canberra's relationship with China was already tense even before COVID-19 because of allegations of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs and cyber espionage. Australia won't want to see the situation get any worse. Australia's income from tourism and education has relied heavily on demand from China. Official advice urging Chinese citizens to avoid travel to Australia could inflict more damage on two sectors already damaged by the pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
President Salva Kiir has ordered an investigation into Wednesday's protests in Juba's Sherikot neighborhood to determine if they were politically motivated. The protests followed deadly clashes between some residents and bodyguards of a top army officer who was related to the president. The officer died from his injuries. 9 people in all were killed. Youth who originally come from Bor but reside in Sherikot reportedly led the protests. Justice Minister Madol Arol will run the 7-member panel. President Kiir said Sunday that the panel will report its findings within a week. Local leaders and aid officials say more than 10,000 people have been displaced now by flooding in Jungle Estates, Bor County. The director of Jungle Estates Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says he expects more people will flee their homes for higher ground in the coming weeks. The River Nile crested its banks in mid-May after days of heavy rains. Local officials say the Nile continues to overflow there. Community leaders and internally displaced persons accuse state officials of ignoring their suffering. Residents say they have lost their food and all of their belongings in the floods. And finally, some COVID-19 patients are criticizing the South Sudan Health Ministry for losing valuable time in carrying out contact tracing of confirmed cases. Some health workers took samples from contacts more than 2 weeks ago but have yet to provide the results. Information Minister Michael McQuay, who tested positive more than 2 weeks ago, says the health ministry has failed to contain the virus. McQuay says it took health workers 7 days to collect samples from his family members and other contacts, which he calls unacceptable. He says discrepancies in procedures at the health ministry make people wonder if the government will ever be able to contain the spread of the virus. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a song about family affairs by Wilson Muzika. This time he sings in his native Mundu language.
Wilson's Muzika, Mundu Boys. Ijeje, Narere Kamango Ekoti. Bursa Kute Mungu Fere Lakoto. Imama Lamani Kazuka Mungu Kute. Murukute mungu fere lakoto, di mama lama ni kazuka ngungu kuti. Urse kute mungu fere lakoto, di mama lama ni kazuka ngungu kuti. Murukute mungu fere lakoto, di mama lama ni kazuka ngungu kuti. Kuba munekai, kula munekai, kundu munekai, ada munekai.
Say, Mutiri waram, Mundu boys go bichin fi. Urse kuti temula zoro kuti, Ujenguka komuko watimu. Muru kuti temula zoro kuti, Ujenguka uruse waramu. Kubeila anguka idozi, Falamu ubeila ndama. Urse kuti temula zoro kuti, Ujenguka komuko watimu. Muru kuti temula zoro kuti, Ujenguka uruse waramu. Kubeila anguka idozi, Falamu ubeila ndama.
Listening to Wilson Muzika singing about family affairs in his native Mundu language. The Mundu are found in central and western Equatorial states. I must admit that the Mundu are my uncles. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for choosing us this evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.